pranam api indriyani api chalam buddhim cha shunyam viduhu shri bala anda jada upamaha tu aham iti brantaha prasham vadinaha maya shakti vilasa kalpita maha vyamoha sangharine tasmai shri gurumurtaye nama idam shri dakshinamurtaye. Deham, the physical body, the deha. Okay. Prana, the vital force, it's really five pranas, but prana just as you take it as the one word, it's the vital force that really includes your circulatory system, your digestive system, your ingoing and outgoing breath, and the apana, also the excretion. Okay. And upana also, prana, apana, samana, vyana,
udana.
Udana. Udana is the peristaltic movement, and also that ejects the soul at this time of death. Okay, so those five capacities, those are five capacities that the prana has as it informs the body, as it fills the body. These capacities are what we call prana. What is the energy that brings about the digestion and the circulation and the ingoing and outgoing breath and evacuation and regurgitation and also ejecting the soul, that type of thing. That's the prana. That's the energy. Rajas. Prana is a manifestation of rajas. It's the sattva rajas and tamas. So the deha, prana api, also the prana, indriyani api, also the indriyas. It's two sets of indriyas that we think, this body has, we have a physical body here for the jiva, the sukshma sharira, we have that physical body, the stula sharira. We have the prana, we have the five sense organs, the prana divides into five, right? We have the five sense organs, your ears, your sense of touch, your sense of sight, your sense of taste, your sense of smell. We also have five organs of action. So the jnanendriyas, the indriyas are comprised of two. The sense organs called jnana means knowledge. So the jnanendriyas, jnana indriyani, the indriyas, the organs of knowledge are the sense organs. And then the karmendriyas, the karma indriyas, the organs of action. Those are also five. The organs of action would be like your vak speech, your hands, your feet, your sexuality, and also your powers of evacuation as the organ of evacuation. So these are the five karmendriyas. That's 10, right? There's five karmendriyas. There's five, so and then five sense organs, five pranas. That's 15. Yeah, 15 members. And then he says, also chalam buddhim. Also the buddhi, which is chala, means the buddhi stands for in this case, because we only have buddhi by itself, the whole antakarna. We'll see that in a different way. And that buddhi is feminine. So chala means motion, moving. Chala is feminine as an adjective. So chalam buddhim. So that ever moving, flowing thought flow is the chalam buddhim. And shunyam vidu. Shunyam means that which is the Buddha's shunyata, that which is absolutely empty. So, but let me just complete this little thing I wanted to say. When we talk about the sukshma sharira, we have this in his terms of the jiva, okay, transmigrating jiva. We have this physical body that acts as an upadhi. for us, for any human being, where what that means, it acts as an upadhi, means that the ahankara, the I notion, can land here. That's what makes something an upadhi. If I can say, I am that, I am this body, or I am any qualities of the body, like I am a woman, or I am a man, or I am old or young or fat or thin, you know, those are all identifications of my being with this physical body, so this body becomes an upadhi. Upadhi is actually an important word. That's why I'm spending a little time. You need to know this word. So this body takes the I. So I can actually say, I am the body. So now a whole, as we'll see in a minute, a whole philosophy can build, a whole doctrine can be built up around that premise that I, this person that I am, is this physical body. Okay. Now I also have prana, this physical body, is enlivened by prana. And so I can say, and we go through all of this step by step in the Tight Three Upanishad, actually. We can say, you know, this physical body without me, the prana, right, you know, would be dead. I am the prana. So my identification can be with the energy that informs this body, with the vital force that informs this body, because of which we have digestion and circulation, you know, and all of these, and the ingoing and outgoing breath, and the evacuation and the peristaltic movement. All of that is because of prana. So the prana can act and does act also as an upadhi for us, for any person. You know, like if you can say, I have no energy. You can even say, you know, I now all of a sudden, I'm not going to say, I am. I can say, I'm my body. Of course I'm my body. Probably won't say just in the world, I'm my prana. Of course I'm my prana, you know. But we will identify with adjectives of that. Like, I am tired, I have no energy, you know, my digestion isn't working, I feel like my feet are always cold, I don't have any good circulation, you know. My prana and apana, it's not even. Sometimes, by the way, prana and apana are taken to be, like, this is just a little aside, are taken, Puja Swamiji used to always take prana as the ingoing breath, is that right? And apana as the outgoing breath. Is that right? No, I think prana, no, it's the other. Prana is the outgoing breath and apana is the ingoing breath. It means you're bringing it in like that. And so that's all you would ever say, okay? But actually, the prana normally includes the ingoing and outgoing breath, and apana includes that which expels the outgoing, so your process of evacuation. I think Swamiji felt a little uncomfortable talking about evacuating, you know? And so it wasn't until way, let alone sex. Yeah. Yeah, the sexual organs and all of that. So no, we're not gonna go there. So it wasn't until way later, in like the last few years of his life, when I think he was teaching Vedanta Sara, which it goes into details. Vedanta Sara is an excellent book for getting all kinds of details. So he was going through this, all the pranas, and he actually separated prana. Prana is the ingoing, outgoing breath, from the apana, is that which is responsible for the evacuation. And that is the first time. He might have done it before, because, you know, there was years when I was attending. That's the first time I ever heard him do that. So I suppose it's fine to take it either way, because prana and apana, those are two words for, you know, the outgoing and the ingoing breath. But then that system of evacuation and everything is that energy. Also can be looked at as all the energy that can push out, you know, and then the udana, the energy that can push up. So that also makes sense, maybe more sense. Those are just a little insight things about Swami, life with Swamiji. All the things we love. Yeah. So we have the physical body that is an upadhi. The prana and all of its aspects are an upadhi. They take the eye. Also your organs of action, you know, your hands, your feet, your ability to speak. I can speak, I can grasp, I can walk, you know, or I am going to walk to the store. It's so the Atma can walk, you know. Or I think I'm going to lift weights so that I can make my arms a little stronger. Or I'm going to work on my grasp, thing like that. So the organs of action also are points of identification. Of course, the sense organs, I'm seeing, I saw that, I hear. Now the Atma is being somebody who sees and hears, you know, and all that. And then, of course, so that's 15 now, right? 15. In terms of the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, 5 pranas, 5 organs of action, and 5 sense organs. And then the manas, the mind, here is buddhi. But the manas, the mind is actually divided into 4 parts. The manas is the fluctuating mind, or where the negative emotions are held. The buddhi is the deeper mind, and where the knowledge and clarity is held. Those type of vrittis. They're like categories of vrittis, categories of thought modifications. So you've got the buddhi, the manas. Then another category of vrittis are the memory, right? The memories. Those also belong to the mind. The mind is also the receptacle for all of the input from the sense organs, but these are the things that it itself does. It has memories, it has the fluctuating mind, it holds the emotions, it has the decisive mind, the buddhi, those type of thoughts, and it has the ahankara, the one that says, I am doing this, I am doing that. That's also a vritti. Right? It's probably the most common vritti, because everything that you do, you are the center of all of your experience, so that I is always landing on something. Right? So that's the ahankara. Those are those 19 components, right, that make up what we call the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, the one that transmigrates. And that takes, based upon your karma, takes body after body after body. This physical body now is informed by the subtle body, my subtle body, as opposed to yours, each subtle body is one subtle body per person, right? That subtle body is transmigrating, taking birth after birth after birth, dependent upon your karmas. Okay? So any part of that subtle body can be identified, and you can take a philosophical position that I am that, right? And so in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it systematically goes through negating all of those positions, starting with the body. I take myself, I am the body. I am the prana. I am my organs of knowledge. I am my organs of action. So philosophical positions around each one of these is a possibility. And then I am the buddhi, or then the mind you can divide into layers. I am the buddhi because I objectify the manas. The buddhi objectifies the manas. So I'm not the manas, I'm the buddhi. You see what I mean? So that means that the ahankara is landing on all, has all of these potential landing places. So that's why he's starting out here, deha, prana, the indriyas, the buddhi, which is always in motion. And so that's going to be, as we'll see in a minute, a type of Buddhism called the Kshanika Vijnanavadins. We'll look at that. And then also Shunyam. Shunyam is Buddhist, the Shunyavadins, where there is really no Atma. Everything that you think is, everything you say is the Atma is just a conglomerate of a bunch of other things. There really is no Atma, like there's no chariot. There's a bunch of that's a stock example they use. There's really no chariot. Chariot is a nama. It's a name for a bunch of parts, like the seat and the sides and the wheels and the axles and the reins. That's a chariot, called a chariot. But there's no such thing per se. That's shunyam. Okay? The next word, vidduhu, they know. Who knows? They know means they have, they know, they understand this is their knowledge. Whose knowledge? If you go to the end of the second line, the vadinaha. A vadinaha is in the nominative plural. It comes from vadin. The vadinahas who have taken antagonistic position to what the Upanishads have to say. The vadinahas also are looked at as those people who don't know the Shastra. You know, that's interesting. So vadinaha, these people that have taken a contrary position, they have their own darshana. Darshana means their own philosophical system. And they are brisham. Brisham vadinaha. We can take, I'll show you either way, we can take this brisham here. Brisham vadinaha means, and they're very, very committed to it. They're very strong, they're very strongly committed to their philosophical position. And with that strong commitment, this is what they take to be knowledge, to be fact, because the verb is vidduhu. This is what they know. They know it with conviction. And we'll see what they know in a minute. So vidduhu, they have the strong conviction, which is, so now he says, these vadinaha, what kind of vadinaha? Brantaha vadinaha. These vadinaha, who are brisham brantaha, you can make brisham to either side, brisham brantaha, who are very confused. They're confused. So they have, they're mixed up in their mind. Their mind is very highly confused. Brisham brantaha. These confused people, they vidduhu, they understand or believe that the Atma is the Deha or the Prana. They can believe it's the Deha or the Prana or the organs of action or the sense organs. Or they might believe it's the Chalam Buddhi. I'll see that, tell you that in a minute. Or Shunyam. So it says, but let's finish this little part first. It says, so these deluded vadinaha, which are like upamaha. So look at this compound. Shri, bala, anda, jada, upamaha. Upamaha means like. These vadinaha, these, you know, antagonists, who they are confused, like Shri women. I have so much to say on that. they're confused and kind of mixed up. You know, they're confused and mixed up. They have no clarity. Like women, or balas, or little children, or andas. People are blind who can't see. You know, they're confused. They don't know where things are. So anda, the blind. Or the jadas. If you look jada up in the dictionary, which I did just to have, I look up a lot of words over and over again just to get the full picture, the full meaning of these words. So jada means somebody who is stupid. Stupid, okay? Dull-witted, you know? Unintelligent. You know, impaired. So it means a low IQ. A person like a person whose IQ is not up to snuff and so is just dull-witted and stupid. So, like the women, like the women, like the little children, you know, like blind people or like the dull-witted, you know, undeveloped intellect, undeveloped minds, like these people, these vadina, these antagonists, people who have the body is somebody who has their own philosophical system, but that philosophical system is mixed up and confused. They're not clear. And yet they're brisham, they're very, very adamant on what they know as the aham. So if you look at here, Shri Bala Anda Jada Upamaha 2. Aham iti. Right? So So these people, they see as the aham, as the I, they know the I to be. Vidduhu means they know this with conviction, you know, with conviction. They know with conviction that I am the body, or I am the prana, or I am the sense organs, or I am the organs of action, or both, you know. Or within the Buddhist tradition, they know that I am the ever-changing buddhi. So the Swamiji spent a lot of time, and the Brahma Sutras itself spends a lot of time negating different types. There's many different types of things that fall under Buddhism. The ones that are most dealt with in the Vedanta are the Kshanika Vijnanavadins. Kshanika Vijnanavadins and Shunya, the Shunyavadins, are the most common. He negates all of them, but these are the two that are most known today, so we spend the most time on. So the Kshanika means, as Swamiji will say, bleep, bleep, consciousness, beep, beep, you know? The beep, beep consciousness. Kshanika means just a moment. So instead of the buddhi, or instead of your experience in actuality being just one presence, the Atma, which is changeless being, and the mind flowing through, thought after thought after thought after thought, or even as thought flow, if you remove the Atma, the self, from that scenario, then what you have is thought, 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 thought. Each one having what we call vijna, from a Buddhist perspective, each bleep is called vijnana. That means that the consciousness and the nama-rupa that's associated with that consciousness is one moment. Kshanika means moment. So conscious moment, conscious moment, conscious moment, conscious moment. And because it happens sequentially, one after the other, after the other, after the other, it appears to be one. And what they use for that as an example, like for instance, if you are looking at a candle flame, the candle flame is actually being fed by the oil, right, of the oil of the wax. And so the candle flame looks to us like just a candle, like one thing, but actually it's continually being fed, it's continually being reinforced, continually changing. But you're not thinking of it in that way, that each moment is different from the, completely different actually from the next, from the next, from the next, and that there is no real continuity there. Or another example that's commonly used is if you're looking at a river, you know, and you see the river flowing, right? But it looks like one thing. The river looks like one thing. You don't see the moment to moment to moment, or the one water drop being replaced by the other water drops being replaced by the other water drops. You just see the river that is there. I think if you look even from a distance, there's the beautiful river. You don't see that it's moment to what you're experiencing is replaced moment to moment to moment, because they're so closely connected, you know. And so like that, you have an experience of one, of being one being, one person. But actually, that experience is not true. What is true is that you're experiencing a moment to moment to moment to moment to moment to moment to moment. The flaw in that, from a Vedantic perspective, is that when I'm objectifying the world, say I am looking at the candle flame, right? When I analyze the candle flame, I can say, yes, that's true. This experience is replaced by this experience, replaced by this experience, because I'm the constant. And it's similar in reference to my mind. I am the constant in which the flow of thoughts, each which replaces the other, replaces the other, replaces the other, is taking place in a constant, something which is constant, so that my mind can have what's called a pratibhijna. The pratibhijna is a type of memory where I can say, I, who am present to this thought, was present to my previous thought and was the one who was present a long time ago to that thought or to that experience. Another way of saying it is, I am the one who am the adult who was the teenager, who was the little girl, who was the baby. There's a pratyabhijna identification with someone who is present to each one of those experiences. So if there is no continuity between one moment and the next, means everything about the moment, including the vijnanam, including the consciousness, is completely replaced by the next moment. There's no possibility of having a pratyabhijna, because you are totally, what makes you is totally replaced by the next experience. Whereas that's not our experience at all. Our experience is, yes, one experience replaces the next, replaces the next, replaces the next. But I am not being replaced. If I'm being replaced, there's no question of me being the same person who was there in the last moment, because that person is gone. If you can think of it another way, is say we line ourselves up. So, you know, from the standpoint of your mind, here's this person, 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 here's this person. And we just kind of rotate this person to this person to this person to this really quick, right? Because the vijnanam is there, you know, in terms of a thought. Say the person stands for one thought, okay? So here's this person, here's this person, here's blah, 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 blah. Really, really, really fast, we just go right through them. Nevertheless, what is the relationship between this experience and this experience and this experience? The vijnanam is the same in the sense that it's the conscious aspect of the vritti, but from a Buddhist perspective, in kshanika vijnanavadins, the consciousness is one with what is ever being perceived. You can't have consciousness without a perception, right? And so, say the vijnanam is there with the perception, and we go really, move really fast through ourselves, there should be some sort of sense of continuity, but there isn't. I don't know if that works for you, that example. It works for me. Anyway, so take it for like this. You have one vijnanam that is its own experience, the next vijnanam which is its own experience, the next vijnanam which is its own experience. Where's the continuity? Because the vijnanam belongs to that experience, and that vijnanam is gone. It's kshanika. It's replaced by a new vijnanam, by a new vijnanam, by a new vijnanam. And we can say, from somebody looking from the outside, or from the Atma illumining that, then yes, there's continuity, the continuity of myself, but you don't have any illusion that there's a continuity of the vritti that is passing through. The vritti is in play, is displaced. So that's there's other arguments. That's just one way that we would, in this Pratipaksha Siddhanta, you know, where we would look at that position as something which is false. And we would, the Pratipaksha means that with the position that they present, we would present as a Vedantin, a Siddhanta. We would not accept that position. And they would explain it to us. We would understand their position. And they would, and we say, we do not accept that position because of da 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 da, because of these, for these reasons. Then they might come back and say, no, it's not quite like that. It's like this. And then you think, yeah, but in that case, we don't accept that either because of blah, 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 blah. So that's the type of debate that goes on between these vadis and between a Vedantin, because all of these vadis, you know, all of these different philosophical systems become purva pakshas for you. They become objections, you know, in your own mind. Like a Buddhist position or a Sankhya position can be your position, not because you're a Buddhist or a Sankhya, it's just what your mind is thinking of. It becomes like an objection. The Upanishads are saying this, but why can't it be like that? That's what all the Vadis, all of these different philosophical positions that differ from what the vision of the Upanishads, that's what they say. This is what manana is about. Manana is being able to have a debate, have a dialogue with all of these different positions that are held by different darshanas or by that are held by you. You can have that position and you can feel, I don't see why this isn't true. Why can't it be like this? So that discussion, you have to have that discussion. See what I mean? Otherwise, you don't have clear knowledge. You have, instead of knowledge, you have doubt. Doubt is not knowledge. You don't know if it's this way or that way. You don't know. So manana, that mananam is very important. You have to be able, be willing to put it all on the table. If you're right, you're right. If you're wrong, you're wrong. Doesn't matter. You have to put it on the table. Swamiji will say, if you're right and the Vedanta is wrong, let the Vedanta fall. Let it fall. Because we're after, in all the darshanas, what is moksha liberation is really what is true. You know? And if what is true is not something that can be negated. Right? So in our, the sadhanas for gaining knowledge for us are shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That's how we gain nishta, jnana nishta. Shravana means that I am being taught through use of the pramana what the Upanishads have to say. What is the vision that is being presented by the Upanishads? Vision means not that you're having some vision. It's a magical vision. I had this wonderful vision last night. An incredible vision. In my meditation, a great vision came. That's not what they mean. When we use the word vision contextually within Advaita Vedanta, vision comes from like drishti. It means, seeing, what is there to be seen? What is there to be recognized? And I say, what is the vision? What is to be seen, to be directly recognized, to be directly, immediately appreciated as my eyes directly see form and color? The Upanishads have a vision to give me something for me to see. That's how we mean vision. So what is the vision of the Vedanta? What is it that the Vedanta is giving me? What is it that it wants me to understand? And sometimes we'll use the word to see. What does it want me to see? Like we use for to know, we use to see, to emphasize that it's direct, immediate knowledge. It's not something for you to understand conceptually. We want you to understand, but we want you to understand what you recognize, what you see, rather than just be some sort of philosophical position. So when we say the Vedanta, the Upanishads have a vision to give, it wants you to see something. It's a pramana. It's a means of knowledge that is meant to take you to a recognition of what is here, right here and now, to be appreciated, to be recognized, to be seen. So that's how we use the word vision. And then, so shravana means that you have thoroughly, you have spent time with the pramana, with the teaching you've been taught, and all of your questions around what the Upanishads are trying to make you see have been answered. Even including questions like, well, how does it function as a pramana? How does that work? You know? Or what do they mean by Brahman as Satchit Ananda? What does that actually mean? How can Brahman really be the Atma? You know, that's because I want to understand what the Upanishad means. So shravana has to do with being exposed to the teaching, right, and understanding it. So it's not that in shravana you don't have any questions. You can have lots of questions, but the questions are directed toward understanding with the vision of the Upanishads, recognizing it, seeing it, you know, having clarity. That's shravana. Manana is different. Manana is, I understand what the Upanishads are saying, but you know, why can't it be like this? Why isn't why does there only have to be one Atma? I think that we could all have our own Atma, you know? Or why do you say that the creation is mitya? I think the creation is just prakriti, it's its own reality, and each one of us has our own Atma. Why is that not true? The Sankhyas say that. I think that makes sense. Why isn't it true? You know? The Buddhas say, you know, the kshanika vijnana, that there's that bleep bleep consciousness. That makes sense to me. Why isn't that true? Why shouldn't that be true? Why do you think that what the Vedanta says is true and that the bleep bleep consciousness is not true? These are real questions. That's manana. The resolution of those questions is manana. You know? There's the Purva Paksha Siddhanta. You present your argument. It may be in the guise of a Buddhist argument or a Sankhya argument or some other argument, but it's your argument because you're the one that your buddhi needs clarity on this particular point. Why couldn't it be this way? The Upanishad says, why can't it be that? That is manana, okay? And you need that in order to have, really to have understanding. Otherwise, there's all of these kind of loopholes where you don't really understand. It's just kind of a belief and it seems okay, but I don't really know, basically, because it could be like this or like that. I don't know. I'm not clear. Then manana nididhyasana is the third step, but these steps are all interchangeable all of the time. Though nididhyasana requires that you have some clarity. Nididhyasana is contemplation on what you've recognized at the time of teaching, you know. And that nididhyasana is in order to neutralize the dehatma buddhi. Here, dehatma buddhi, buddhi here means that conviction, that knowledge, you know, mithya jnana, that false knowledge, that erroneous conviction that the deha, the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, the physical body, is the atma. Deha means the body. Deha, atma, buddhi. The conviction that myself is the body. Either the sukshma sharira means body, the sukshma sharira, the stula sharira, or the combination. I have a conviction that I am this whole thing or part and parcel of it. That's my conviction. You know, and it's a habitual ajnanam that goes back to beginningless time. And it's a sense of me being this, which is very natural because my sense organs, sense of touch, sukshma sharira are all located in the body, and so the body doesn't not enjoy consciousness. It's like saying the pot enjoys clay for its reality, but it's still a pot. I can say that the clay belongs to the pot. You know, we would say there's only clay. The pot is mitya. So this body is me. You know, I need now, because now I've been exposed to this teaching, I recognize, I see it, that I actually am the self of the body, but free of it also. I see it. I understand. But I keep acting as though I'm the body. That's just that habitual identification. So by nididhyasana, like the contemplations we do in the morning, that gives the mind time to just sit with myself, sit with me, you know. And so that shravana manana nididhyasana helps to bring about that clarity, which involves negating or understanding all of these different vadas. A vadi is the one who has the vada. All of these different positions and seeing that they're fallacious, that it is not true in fact. You have to recognize that. You have to be willing. It's kind of hard sometimes for people who were born as Christians and then, you know, you're young enough. I'm older, so it's more real for me. But this idea that if you don't believe in Jesus or in Christ, you will go to hell. That's so harsh. And as we're growing up in a global society, it's very embarrassing to have such a, have had that in your history, that belief like that. It's just so horrid and arrogant, awful. I can argue that. The problems, terrible problems with that. But because most of us feel really badly about that in reference to other people, we're very committed to all paths lead to the same goal. And so, because one shouldn't be right and the other's wrong, it's like saying, I'm going to go to heaven, but you are not. You know. So we equate all of that. There's a, like a, we confuse those two things together. Right? So we're not that, don't feel that comfortable in really negating somebody else's position as untrue, because that's like saying we're going to go to heaven and you're going to go to hell. It brings back all of that guilt and horrible stuff of that conditioning that we've since rejected. Okay, so, but, you know, in India and in the East, it isn't like that at all. They don't have this heaven and hell thing. You're going to go to heaven, you're going to go to hell. They don't think like that at all. They are wanting to know, and they're absolutely free to think, to question, to debate, to get into relationship, deep conversation with each other and what each other is believing to be true based upon their means of knowledge and their particular darshana that they find themselves in, that they're committed to. Another person is very committed to another darshana. Darshana means a philosophical system. They have complete freedom. They feel no guilt whatsoever to really put it on the table and to really talk about it. And they also know if they're convinced, they'll go to the other side, because the whole thing is about knowledge. So they have a tremendous freedom to think and to inquire and to negate things that are not true because they've understood it to not be true. So that type of intellectual freedom is something I've found in the West that we don't have to the same degree because of this conditioning, this type of conditioning. So in CIS, I talked to our students about it a lot, because I don't want us or our my students, you know, at CIS or here for that matter, to be so constricted by this emotional prison, you know, because you don't want to hurt somebody else because you've hurt them so badly. That's why. Because we've hurt them, people, so badly by negating their whole culture, you know, and their whole relationship with Bhagavan. We've negated it and invalidated it and told them all they have to convert in order to get to heaven. Millions of people have converted, left their culture, left their society, left their families, stripped of everything to follow this belief system, you know, which has kind of left them without anything in terms of their culture and their God, their Bhagavan. Bhagavan has many names. In the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan says, whatever form you come to me in, that form I'll bless you. I don't have to be in just one form. He's Bhagavan. He's the whole creation. It comes in millions of forms. You know, not just one. So say, no, whatever forms you have, that's not Bhagavan. Bhagavan is only my form. The only way, my culture, only my form. You know. So what a travesty. It's a travesty. And so we have a lot of guilt around that. To whatever degree that we've thought about it, there's guilt and shame and embarrassment for the suffering we've caused so many people. And so in a way, it stops us from being able to have the critical thinking that they're able to have, you know, because they don't have this baggage. You know, to them, that inquiry into the truth, the way Bhagavan is, the way things actually are, is paramount. And they don't mind if they lose the battle, you know, in terms of the debate, then they'll go over to the other side. The story's like that. But what I like about it is that it says it's okay for you to really think. And it's also okay for you to think about all of the other darshanas, and it's okay to think about this one and to criticize it in the sense of, why do you think this is true? I have doubts about this. I don't think necessarily this is the truth. We want that. We want you to have that freedom toward all the other darshanas, all the other beliefs, all of your beliefs, all of your positions, and the positions of what the Upanishads have to say also. All of it. So that your mind is free. You have to take the shackles off of your mind. And so here in this verse, you know, that's what he's doing. He's saying some people have this commitment. They take the aham, the me, the self, to be this. Or they take it to be shunya. The Buddhists can take this to be shunyam, the self. There is no self. Why do they take it to be that? Well, because the pramanas, they don't accept the Vedas or the Upanishads as a pramana. Is that our time? They don't accept the Vedas as a pramana, right? And so they accept only pratyaksha, perception, and anumana as a pramana. And so therefore, when you use the word self, you're talking about the self that we use the word for, this body, mind, sense, organs, me. That's what the word self is referring to, right? That's not a self. That's correct, right? This is a conglomerate. Just like the word chariot is not really a word meaning anything. It's meaning a conglomerate. There's no such thing as a chariot. So the Shunyavadins will say, in this experience that we have of this world, there is no self. There is no thing, actually. Everything is interdependent and dependent upon everything else. We totally accept that. But we also have the Vedanta, and we have what's called Lakshana, where the self is, through the use of words, pointed to, because it is there for you to recognize. So now we have two different teaching methodologies, one which is limited by pratyaksha, perception and inference, and one that uses also perception, inference, but also the Upanishads as a teaching pramana. Right? So these are differences to be understood. So that's coming up now. There's some vadis, there's some positions that take the self to be this, that take the self to be this, that take the self to be this. These have to be negated. And then they're not shy about it. They say they have to be negated because they're completely deluded and false. That's the Brantaha. It's not like they're negated, you know. No. They're delusional. They're completely false. Now let me show you how that is. These are the opinions of, you know, women. Okay, so we're going to stop there, and I'm going to finish this verse in our next class, okay? Because I still have more to tell you about this. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.